Hello and welcome to our weekly podcast of Who's Here in the Hamptons. I'm Dan Rettina, your host, broadcasting from my home in the Hamptons, where I have lived for over 55 years. I've written a dozen books about this glorious place, and I've seen it grow through the years from small tourist towns, quaint fishing villages, and a summer playground for high society to what it is today, a world-class resort for celebrities, artists, musicians, authors, and billionaires. In my podcast, I will bring you interviews with not only these people, but also prominent local people who have helped shape the Hamptons. Welcome to Dan's Talks. I'm Dan Rettina, the founder of Dan's Papers, and my guest today is Jeff Simpson, who has purchased an iconic gas station in Bridgehampton that was for many years involved in auto racing. We'll get to that. In Bridgehampton, Bridgehampton has been a notorious location for car racing since about 1951. And I think someone was seriously injured during one of the races through downtown, on the roads downtown. And the whole business was put together by a man named Corrigan, whose name was on this gas station up until about 2 years ago, in big letters to remind you of all those years when racing was taking place out here. And my guest, welcome, Jeff Simpson, and tell us a little bit about how you came to decide on taking over this site and what have you done with it.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me. I've always had a passion for antique cars since I'm a very young teenager. I've lived in Manhattan, and I still do, as my primary home, like many folks in the Hamptons. And I bought my home in Watermill 2017. And my wife knew I liked cars, and I started buying cars. And a few British cars. And, you know, my main focus of my business has been real estate investments for over 20 years. And cars were really a hobby for me. I never had a golf club membership. I always just liked old cars, to work on them, to drive them, to transform them, to have fun with them, usually British cars, sometimes German. So, you know, as my career developed, as things got pretty much the height of my career, I'm 46 now, my low 40s. I start thinking about, what does things look like as I get to retirement? What do things look like as I, you know, diversify my investments? And I've always been a guy that bought real estate that was distressed. And, you know, the old Corrigan site was very distressed. I mean, when I went in there the first time and it was for sale for a while, gosh, I mean, there was plastic hanging to keep the water out of the building. There was holes in the roof. It was pretty hideous, but I've seen the site for years and years, always saying, that's an interesting property. And the zoning surrounding it was quite interesting because it had so much flexibility. And the gentleman that really, there was two people that owned and operated it, the brother-in-laws, and I think they made it an icon of their own. And Steve Lebosco, who was running the facility for 86 or 87, so he's still a class act. He's still doing a number of things. And I really liked him. I liked what he had did there. And I just saw an opportunity. And he said, you want to transform something? Here you go. This is the property. So it started building up just personal investments in Manhattan and here in the Hamptons, because that's where my homes are.
Were you keeping sports cars and other classic cars elsewhere before you bought this thing?
It started with my house in Watermill, which is not any extraordinary house, but I'm a builder by background. My garage was a two-car garage. Then it became a four-car garage. Then it became a six-car garage. So my wife's like, now you have stuff outside too? Enough already. So it turned out, I said, all right, I have this bug. I have this disease. And, you know, career was at its height. It's like, you know what? It's good for tax purposes, diversification. And the property, you know, was an ugly duckling. And it was an opportunity to really take it and turn it into something. And it did evolve, you know, from when I first purchased it. And we did a lot of work to clean it up. And it became something really sort of special, which I was really proud of.
Before you get to that, just for anybody listening to this in the future, this is at the corner of Hayground Road and the Montauk Highway. You're on the north side of the highway. And I'm sure just about anybody who's listening to this, if they drive around the Hamptons often enough, they know that spot and that gas station that sits there. But go ahead.
And that's right, by the way. And not to correct you, you are right. Hayground's on the one side, but Windmill is sort of like the immediate, you know, cross street that we're really at the triangle of Windmill and 27. But it's there were even stories years ago about, you know, some very well-known, you know, celebrities that would show up there in their limos to pump their gas, et cetera. But it was not an operable gas station, actually, since the 90s. But yeah, so my vision was, you know, I always liked beach cars. I always liked convertibles, roadsters. I always liked, you know, Land Rovers, Land Cruisers. And it took a while to sort of figure out what was the best resolution. There's a lot of service work happening there. And service work is really, really hard for automobiles. And frankly, it's very labor intensive. I've never really been a person, in all my years of investing and purchasing, I've been more project person rather than a service person. And, you know, it evolved into something where people would come to us and say, hey, I want one of those. And it was a Land Rover that was unique and special, in the color they wanted, the leather they wanted, the type of drivetrain they wanted. And with my engineering background, I would curate something that they wanted, you know, pretty much what it was locally, which I was very proud of, because although there are others that have sold, you know, vintage Land Rovers or G-Wagon Mercedes or SL Mercedes, I don't know of any of them that really built them soup to nuts locally. I still don't know of anyone that has, and we did. And that was really what I was proud of, is it was all done on that premises, just about everything. I mean, we even dealt with some upholstery at times. I mean, and if we didn't, we had someone local help us, like in Southampton. So we really did everything local. A lot of vehicles like this are come from Europe. They come from other places. People procure them. They broker them. That was not me. That's not who we were. And it was something I really was very proud of. And it also reduced sort of being a heavily oriented service business. The customer base became very focused on, you know, doing 6, 8, 10 very unique vehicles at a time. And that was really what was a lot of fun.
Give me an idea of the cars that you have done and are doing.
Yeah, so
these are restorations, am I correct?
Yeah, right. And, you know, unfortunately, with, you know, that we can get into if you like, but unfortunately, there's just been this larger partnership thing that has held me back from working that property. And the property today does not look like what it did a year ago. But shifting away from that for a moment, focusing on the good stuff that I like, you probably like, we've talked about Triumphs, you and I love them. And I had actually a Triumph TR3, which was one of my favorite that I've restored. And Austin Yeley 3000, remarkable. But I would say here locally, what do people like the most that I've built and I enjoy too? I would say they really like Land Rovers. People really like vintage Land Rovers. And I've shifted my attention away from this craze of Defenders. I don't know the difference, but Defenders were, they were in the 90s and they're very plasticky, but they're really cool cars. And I like the old Land Rovers, the 1960s Land Rovers. And I've started curating them where I take the drivetrains from the 90s and I put air conditioning in, automatic. And it's still Land Rover proper, but it has that nostalgic look of a 1960s British vehicle. And that's something that I'm very proud of, very excited about. Those are a lot of fun. I enjoy them. I enjoy building them, driving them, you name it. My kids take what they call my beater and go off-roading on the beach with it in the Hamptons here. So it's fun.
How many cars have you restored over the years?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I would say even from age 13 until I went to college, I probably did 25 cars in those 5 years. I didn't have a driver's license until I was 17. And it was a lot of fun. Those were mostly NGs and Triumphs. I could not afford a Land Rover. Actually, I had one Land Rover. I take that back, 1996. But I don't even know the number. I would say even in the last 3 years, it's definitely a number that's north of 50, probably 75. And I would say the vast majority were beach-type vehicles. And all the trucks, it was the three popular were Land Rovers of any different iteration, the Mercedes G-Wagons, and the Land Cruisers, and mostly convertible. And then on the roadster side, I'm a big British car guy. I'd say that the market here seems to like more, you know, Porsches, Mercedes. So we did a number of those as well. Like the Mercedes SLs, people love them. I did so many of them, like let's say a 560 SL or a 380 SL. And they're a great car. I'm very proud of them. Not my favorite. I'm more of a 60s car guy. And you and I have discussed this. I like 50s and 60s, but doesn't mean everybody else does. But they're still fun and they're still pretty neat. But I've always tried to stay away from stuff that's newer because it just, to me, it's not the same. But there are some really obviously great things that are built later.
So this place has the garage bays necessary for you to do painting and do you take dents out and stuff like that?
You know, as I mentioned, unfortunately today, I mean, the last year we haven't been active there because of this litigation, but I am active anyway. I still survive. But in our prime there was a separate building in the back and it was designed this way. And it was even, and the two guys that owned it, two brother-in-laws, one of them always did paint work. So the back building was set up as a paint shop. And painting was the drop of the bucket. We did full steel, full rust remediation. And I still do. I'm talking about taking things that are like, some of them I think belongs in a junkyard, and completely revamping it and completely rebuilding it. And I've even done Mustangs. I've done old Ford pickups from the 50s and the 70s. I've done T-Birds from the 50s. Full paint, full rust repair, the whole nine. And yeah, no, it's set up for full spray booth. Legally, properly, EPA, everything, you know, approved. Yeah.
Do you have a workman in the staff, or do you do all the work yourself?
Well, so in the prime of that business, right, when things were going, I thought the best, which is really probably peaked, you know, early 25, I had probably 7 to 8 people that were physically doing work. And then I had 2 people in the office. And although I would curate a lot of it, and I could do most of the work with my own 2 hands, I was doing very little of the work because I was just very busy with all the other parts and pieces. Unfortunately, with a lot of this nonsense I've had to deal with, litigation that started elsewhere, nothing to do with this, but has caused this place to be shut down, I believe improperly, through a court-appointed receiver that has a whole other conversation for another time. It's the place looks like a jungle now. I mean, there's no one there, and I do have people that are helping me now, but I'm not at the same volume, and I'm doing it, you know, more with folks part-time, and I'm doing more with my hands now than ever, which in some ways is a lot of fun to get, you know, dirty, and the way I did as a teenager.
Where is the work being done now, since it's not being done there at the moment?
Yes, so I don't have an official retail establishment at this time, but I do have 2 locations that I do work out of currently that I don't really disclose to the public because we're not really not set up for that. But people reach out to me and we get it done. And it's all local, though, anyway. And by the way, the same thing. Still doing everything from, I'm building a Bronco today with a Coyote swap, which is a very modernized motor. Everyone who's driving the classic Bronco, mostly everyone wants to have this setup with automatic transmission, et cetera. I'm doing a couple of really nice Land Rovers. And I'm not the kind of person who gets beaten down even by some, you know, tough situations. And I'm continuing in my passion and what I like to do.
What was the first car you ever restored?
Well, I would say the first restoration I did is a really good little story you asked there. I was 15 and maybe 14. But I got fascinated with MGs. And my father convinced me, because my grandfather was a World War II veteran. He was a D-Day veteran. And my father convinced me the MGs were awesome because the gauges were like an airplane at Smith's or Jager gauges. And I said, Dad, I want one. And he says, okay, well, you work, make money, whatever. So I ended up buying 2 of them before I actually restored one. The third one I actually restored.
Where was this?
This was in Ocean County, New Jersey, where I grew up. And my first was a 66 silvery gray MGB GT, where a guy had too many cars and his wife said, I'm going to kill you. Let's get rid of some. And I paid $500 for it. And he did some work to it. He actually, it's funny, you look at an MGB GT, it sort of reminds you of an Aston Martin DB5, but like nowhere near there, right? The guy actually customized the grill to make it look like a DB5 in the front. And I remember he put a Jaguar exhaust on it. And then I finished the car because it wasn't done. I put all the chrome, you know, bells and whistles on it. I drove this to high school at 16 in New Jersey. And people were like, what is this car? It had white wire wheels with the chrome spinners. It was fantastic. It was great. I actually have a duplicate of that, by the way, sitting at my house in my garage. I haven't touched it in 3 years. I bought just to sort of have a memory of my childhood years. My kids know, all right, Dad, you'll be dead before you ever finish it. I'm like, oh, eventually I will. It's safe in my garage.
Where did you go to college?
I went to the University of Delaware for engineering and NYU for my master's degree in the city.
Where did you study at NYU?
I was in the real estate program, which was on 42nd Street. I don't know if they're still there. But they had, they called it Time the Shack program. So I did that while I was working in real estate. But it's funny you ask, my first college experience is I got into college for mechanical engineering because I wanted to design cars. And my parents, my father was an engineer background, says, you know, son, look, I appreciate the engineering because he was an engineer. He goes, but are you really going to be able to make a living designing cars? And are you really going to be able to get there? And so my sophomore year, he convinced me. And I switched to civil engineering, similar to what he did when he went to college in the late 60s, early 70s. And that sort of led to my real estate career, which frankly, if I didn't have a real estate career, I wouldn't have a house in the Hamptons. I wouldn't have bought that business. I wouldn't have been doing these things. So unfortunately, my dad passed away a long time ago, but he was right. It was good advice.
When did you start doing them as a business proposition rather than just as a teenager?
Yeah, so I didn't have anything really in business vehicles until I bought, 1640, 1640 Montauk, which was known as River Motors. And that was in 2022. So, only about 4 years ago. I lived in Manhattan, still having my home in Manhattan. And my career was 15 hours a day in real estate investing for over 20 years. And if I didn't have sort of this partnership thing that found its way to the Hamptons, I probably would have continued with that. And the auto business would have had somebody continue to run it, not me, and I would just enjoy it like a hobby. So the situation sort of forced itself a couple of years ago where I just said, all right, I need to take the bull by the horns and just run this thing on my own. And yeah.
So are you like officially a 40-year-old retiree now doing cars?
No. With one in college, one who's, finishing high school. My real estate career is still very important to me. It always was. And although automobiles are a lot of fun, it's certainly not the kind of business that has the, the sort of revenue, et cetera, that, supports my educational background, our livelihood, even though we don't live fancy. So my hope is to sort of, juggle both. The guy works 15 hours a day. Always have. I love doing that. So we shall see where the future holds. But I'm trying to get through some of this harsh times of litigation and put that behind me and trying really hard to get past that. And hopefully just get back to some level of normalcy. And I don't know what that is for me yet, but no, I'm not retired. I work really hard. I enjoy it. And I love challenge and opportunity.
Is there any real estate project you could tell me about that you've done recently or are involved with?
Oh, yeah. I've done so many, but I will give you a little Hamptons note, which you might enjoy. So before I owned my house in the Hamptons, I don't even know what the name of it is today. So my claim to fame here is in Sag Harbor, the old Whalers building that is right by the bridge, the Steinbeck Park. How about that? The Steinbeck Park in Sag Harbor, right when you cross the bridge into North Haven there. So that project, which was developed by Jay Bielski, I took over that project in maybe 2012 or 13, and it was dragging for years. I don't know if you remember the story on it, and it was a big battle about entitlements, and we hired Robert A. Stern, well-known architect, and we were able to transform it into a project that the town got comfortable approving, the village, I should say. We did a deal with Southampton Town, where we sold them the property, which is now a park, under the bridge there. So my kids always laugh every time we cross. He goes, Daddy, you tell me about the story about the property all over again to go there, for ice cream or dinner. But even though I worked for a larger company before I started my own business around 2017, and Jay bought the project from us. But it originally was conceived as a 12 or 13 unit condominium, ended up being, three high-end homes. But I think just to going through the process of learning the Hamptons, learning the dynamics, working with town of Southampton, the village of Sag Harbor. It was an interesting entitlements experience. It was an interesting, I never did a sort of, for lack of a better term, it was almost like a public-private partnership because selling off half of the property to the town of Southampton / the village of Sag Harbor was a new experience for me in my real estate career. And I think it was a win-win. So it was nice. The community got their park and there was a development that was there, which again, I can't take responsibility for. The last couple of years and the buildings that are there, but it was a dead stalled project with a lot of acrimony. And I was very pleased to turn it into a positive direction. But I've done all types of ground up developments. I could probably name 20 buildings in the New York area in the city that I've built condominiums. I've built rental buildings, small, medium, large. I've built townhomes, $20 million and larger, thousands of apartments down south in Florida, North Carolina, South Carolina. I've done projects in California, Miami. I've done a lot in my 25 years. but cars are easier and more fun.
What's your favorite car?
It's funny. People ask all the time. And I think I noodle back and forth between, an XK Jaguar. And I say XK, I'm talking about like a 140 or 150, right? Not an XKE. My Austin Yoli 3000 Mark III, the last year, 67. That was a pretty good car. I have to say, I had a British Racing Green with overdrive. That was really a pretty awesome one.
Yeah. Well, thanks for being on the podcast. And yes, I'd like you to come by and have a look at this triumph that I've had so many years.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, it's always a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Sure.
And I look forward to seeing you very soon. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All the best to you. Bye-bye.